Chapter 34. Danielle lay in bed and watched the smoke of her cigarette curl toward the ceiling. She was only dimly aware of the warm little bedroom in the remote cottage outside Ottawa, the gathering darkness of the evening, the firm, smooth body beside her. She sat up and looked at her watch. The interlude was over, and she felt a regret that it could not go on indefinitely. Responsibility beckoned, and she was compelled to re-enter reality.
"Time for you to go," he asked, stirring beside her. She nodded.
"I must play the dutiful wife and visit my husband in the hospital."
"I don't envy you. Hospitals are nightmares in white."
"I've become used to it by now."
"How is Charles coming along?"
"The doctors say he can come home in a few weeks."
"Come home to what?" he said contemptuously. "The country is rudderless. If an election were held tomorrow, he would surely be defeated."
"All to our advantage." She rose from the bed and began dressing. "With Jules Guerrier out of the way, the timing is perfect for you to resign from the cabinet and publicly announce your candidacy for president of Quebec."
"I'll have to draft my speech carefully. The idea is to come on like a savior. I cannot afford to be cast as a rat jumping a sinking ship."
She came over and sat down beside him. The faint smell of his maleness aroused her again. She placed a hand on his chest and could feel his heartbeat.
"You were not the same man this afternoon, Henri."
His face seemed to take on a concerned look.
"How so?"
"You were more brutal in your lovemaking, almost cruel."
"I thought you'd enjoy the change."
"I did." She smiled and kissed him. "You even felt different inside me."
"I can't imagine why," he said casually.
"Neither can I, but I loved it." Reluctantly, she pushed herself away and stood up. She put on her coat and gloves. He lay there, watching her. She paused and looked down, giving him a penetrating look. "You never told me how you arranged to make Jules Guerrier's death appear natural." A chilling expression came into his eyes.
"There are some things you are better off not knowing."
She looked as though she'd been slapped in the face. "We never had secrets between us before."
"We do now," he said impassively.
She did not know how to react to his sudden coldness. She had never seen him like this, and it stunned her.
"You sound angry. Is it something I've said?"
He glanced at her uninterestedly and shrugged.
"I expected more from you, Danielle."
"More?" "You've told me nothing about Charles that I can't read in a newspaper." She looked at him questioningly.
"What do you want to know?"
"The man's inner thoughts. Conversations with other cabinet ministers. How does he intend to deal with Quebec after the separation? Is he thinking of resigning? Damn it, I need information, and you're not delivering." She held out her hands expressively. "Charles has changed since the plane crash. He's become more secretive. He doesn't confide in me as before."
His eyes went dark.
"Then you've become useless to me." She averted her face, the hurt and anger swelling in her breast. "Don't bother contacting me again," he went on icily, "unless you have something important to say. I'm taking no more risks for boring sex games." Danielle ran for the door, and then she turned. "You son of a bitch," she choked through a sob. How odd, she thought, that she had never seen the monster in him before. She suppressed a shudder and wiped at the tears with the back of her hand as she fled. His laughter followed her to the car and rang in her ears during the drive to the hospital. She could not know that back in the bedroom of the cottage, Fosgly lay highly pleased with himself for passing his final test with flying colors.